the second in a series on authority in modern Israel. I'm grateful to Shomer Shabbos for hosting the series, Shmuel Bernstein for his encouragement, Eli Bienenstock for his encouragement. Some of you, maybe all of you, heard Rabbi Ziering last week. God willing, he's going to speak next week as well. His topic is police forces on Shabbos, which another aspect, maybe not one that we like to think about, but another aspect of what it takes to have halachic life in a state. But our topic for tonight is the issue of Mara D'Asra. Now, Mara D'Asra is an issue, obviously, not just in Israel, but globally. You know, when you think about Israel in particular, it poses a big challenge on a couple of different levels. Number one, the fact that as you have here, as you have in Jewish communities around the world, you have this convergence of different communities, multiple shuls in the same space. And the question of how do you define a Mara D'Asra when you have communities living in close quarters? And that is an issue everywhere. But then also there's an Israel-specific issue, which is how do you define Mara D'Asra when there is a politically appointed Mara D'Asra, when either the chief rabbinate themselves are appointees of various committees, or the chief rabbinate appoints somebody and says, this is the chief rabbi of Rehovot or wherever you are. So, you know, what kind of authority does that Mara D'Asra have? So those are two issues that I want to get to, but you have to build towards it. You can't start with that question. So what I want to do is look at this in three tiers. The first one is the question of whether there is such a thing as a posek. In other words, am I required to go to a particular rav for all of my questions? Maybe I am entitled, and you know, people discount this automatically, but they shouldn't. Maybe I'm entitled to ask shilos of whoever happens to be at hand. This morning I was in shul, I had a question that came up, I saw a rabbi, I asked him the question. Then at mincha, I had another question, I asked a different rabbi, who says that I have to have a mara at all, so to speak. And then second, we need to move to discuss the general authority of Mara D'Asra. And that has sort of subtopics within it. Is a Mara D'Asra able to impose a personal stringency? Mara D'Asra says, there's a machlokas between, fill in the blank with your two favorite Rishonim, on a particular topic, and I believe that you should go lahachmer. I believe you should be strict. Ah, there are other people who say you should be lenient. Yeah, but I say strict, and therefore everybody in my community has to be strict. Or the other way around. You have a machlokas in which you have one view that says asur, one view that says mutter. The general tendency of the world is to say asur, but the rabbi in my city and the rabbi in my shul said mutter. And therefore I am entitled to say, well, he's the Mara D'Asra. And therefore I am allowed to follow him against the rest of the halachic world. Or there's a rabbi in the community. The rabbi is the posik for the shul. I move into the city. I have smicha. It says yore yore. It says I'm allowed to paskin. Is there anything to stop me from setting up shop and answering questions when people ask? So, you know, a lot of you may know my bias already, and you know, because people who have asked me shilos always know that I always say that I am not poskening, and I believe very strongly in Mara D'Asra in terms of this. But we're going to have to discuss where does that come from and what are the points of view on it. And once we've covered that... Sorry? No. The all Greeks are liars and so forth. Yes. So once we cover the question of whether there's such a thing as a posek, and then the second question of is there such a thing as a Mara D'Asra, then we have to ask what happens in this global world with all the different communities that come together, with members of the same geographic community potentially seeing themselves as part of different ideological communities, right? As Aaron Lichtenstein worded the question, if you have a Lubavitcher who grows up his whole life in Crown Heights, and then he moves to Melbourne, Australia, is it really wrong for him to follow the Pesach of Lubavitch? Yeah, I mean, Melbourne has a nice big, you know, Lubavitch community, but you understand the question fundamentally. Ideologically, he's part of a very different community than his geographic community. Are you going to tell me he can't follow his ideological community because he moved somewhere where, you know, where he's not in Crown Heights anymore? And then in Israel, the question I mentioned in the beginning of political appointees and how you view such a Mara D'Asra. So we go back to our first point. Is there a chiyuv to follow a particular posek? What would you say? Is there any such chiyuv to have a particular posek? Forget Mara D'Asra overall. Yeah, Jeff.
I mean, it would make sense for consistency's sake.
Yeah. Consistency's sake, when meaning what?
Meaning that you don't want to ask, if you're at least in one particular area, you don't want to ask that cautious question, and then the next day ask from another cautious question, and you're being inconsistent and stuck.
What's inconsistent about it?
Because one holds this stuck, one holds the other stuck, and you know Monday you held like this, and Tuesday you held like this.
So you're saying not to ask just any questions in cautious, but the same question in cautious.
Well, seemingly they're related questions.
In other words, Tuesday I tramped up my dishwasher, and I went to this rabbi, and this rabbi said to me that there's nothing you can do about it. So Wednesday I went out, and I got a new dishwasher. And then I tramped up the dishwasher again, so I shouldn't go to another rabbi with it, because that'll be inconsistent.
Or two different shilas that are based on the same klal. You may not know it's based on the same klal, but the rav knows it's based on the same klal. One possibly like right. This way, one possibly the other way.
Good. So you're saying that there's a concern. In other words, the problem based on what you're saying is really not a problem of I need a posek. The problem is that when it comes to my halachic life, I can't operate on contradictory terms. The same problem would exist if it was one posek, and he happens to be a very broad-minded posek, and he gives one answer for one type of person, another answer for another type of person, and for me, he sees me one way one day and one way another day, and he gives me two different answers. All the same problem.
It could be a hashkafic thing as well, meaning if you're asking a question that could, that's related to saying hello on Yom HaTzimut as an example. So yeah. If you're going to ask, if you're generally you follow Zionistic tendencies, and then you go ask somebody non-Zionist whether you say hello on Yom HaTzimut, so that's inconsistent, seemingly, perhaps.
I'm not going there, but I don't think it's a function of Zionism. I think it's a function of halacha. But take a look at source number one, please. These are two Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos. Two Mishnahs in Birkei Avos. The first one, they're both in Perek Aleph. Yeshua ben Prachya Omer Aseh Lecha Rav Uknei Lecha Chaver. Right? Make a rabbi for yourself and also acquire for yourself a friend. Friend, colleague, however you want to read that. That's the first Mishnah. Then you have a second Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel Omer Aseh Lecha Rav Yistalek Ben Asafek. Make a rabbi for yourself and avoid doubts. So why do I need Aseh Lecha Rav twice in the first Perek of Birkei Avos? So the classic explanation, frankly one that I would favor, is simply that Pirkei Avos is allowed to be redundant, Pirkei Avos is allowed to be self-contradictory, don't try to view them as atomic units, they're not the, or I should say you view them as, don't view the whole thing as an atomic unit. Right, well no, I say don't view the entire thing as atomic, such that it has to be internally consistent. Someone can say Ashlosh Dvarim Ha'olam Omid, and someone else can say Ashlosh Dvarim Ha'olam Kayam, and I don't have to sit there and think what's the difference in all. The answer is they each use their own language, and they're expressing different ideas. However, the Rambam on this point disagrees, as does the Meiri, as do many Rishonim, and they say that these are two different types of Rabbanim. The first one, the Rambam says, is talking about in terms of your learning. Make a teacher for yourself. The second one is talking about a posek. And the Rambam writes, Zasher Tzivakan Basias Rav, Ein Hu Le'inyan Alimud Elo Haras HaHalacha. The Rambam says on the second Mishnah that it's talking about psak. Amar Asei Lecha Ish L'Rav. We'll leave out the Ish-Isha discussion. He says, make for yourself a man as your Rav, Kedesha Tismoch Alav B'Mutter U'Ba'Asr, so that you will depend upon him, both in terms of what is Mutter and in terms of what is Asr, so the whole set of questions that you will have. Halachically, but it's not like Gatam and Asafik. In this way, you will not be in doubt. But does that mean that you have to have a single posek? That just means that the Mishnah says you should have psak. That you shouldn't rely on yourself to answer your questions. You're going to be in doubt if you rely on yourself. Find somebody who will answer your questions, and that way you will no longer be in doubt. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have a single posek. And so I point you to the Gemara in Erevin in source number two. Gemara asks, in the course of a discussion that we don't need to get into here, it's his own Erev discussion, Umi Avdinan Kitre Chumri, would we really follow what appears to be in the discussion there two stringencies that are contradictory? Vatanya, La'olam Halacha Kibis Hillel, Varot Zelazos Kedivar Beishamai Oseh, Kedivar Beis Hillel Oseh, the Halacha in a certain case follows Beis Hillel. However, if you want to follow Beishamai, you can do that. You want to follow Beis Hillel, you can do that. Mikule Beis Shammai, Mikule Beis Hillel, Rasha. Don't follow everybody's leniencies. And and Mechumer Beis Shammai, Mechumer Beis Hillel, all of a kasev Omer, Aksil Bachoshech Olech. And if you have somebody who says, I'm going to be strict like Beis Shammai where they're strict, I'm going to be strict like Beis Hillel where they're strict, so we call him a fool. Ela'i ki Beis Shammai ki Kulei Hon Gechum Rehon, I ki Beis Hillel ki Kulei Hon Gechum Rehon. Pick a side and follow their stringencies and follow their leniencies and be consistent within that side, the Gemara says. And so it's bothered, how could you apparently follow contradictory opinions, as the sugya there in Erevin seems to say. So Amar Shizbi, kilo avdinon kechumre de betrei hecha de sasriya hadadi. Rav Shizbi's answer is, you could follow the chumros of both. There is nothing wrong with having multiple poskim and saying, I'm going to follow his chumros and I'm going to follow his chumros. That's just fine. However, where they start to contradict each other in the sense that, and this goes back to what Jeff was saying, they are relying on the contradictory views of the same subject, that's where you get into trouble. And that's what we want to avoid. And therefore, in Echanami, it could be wise to have one posek in order to avoid running into contradictory positions without even knowing it. And Navarro Lichtenstein makes this point in an article that I'm going to reference later.
So, this is even more, right? This is psychopathic, right? This isn't just a matter of consistency. It's a matter of that if you're choosing which rav to follow in a certain specific situation, so in Mela you become the rav because you've already said I'm going to be more lenient or I'm going to be more not.
Right, but that does it. If the reason why I'm not supposed to do this is because I'm fundamentally internally contradictory, the question of volition, was it my decision to do that or not, frankly doesn't even matter. Even if I'm completely ignorant of it, it's still wrong.
Right.
That wouldn't change it. So that what we're seeing here is that there is no imperative of you must pick a posek. There is an imperative of you must be consistent in what you do, and having a posek will help you be consistent in what you do. But there's no imperative of pick a posek. And in fact, Aseh Lecha Rav is not brought in the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah. It's not brought in the Torah. It's not brought in the Shulchan Aruch. None of them say Aseh Lecha Rav as a matter of halacha. And in fact, the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Kara, who knew a thing or two about halacha, did not have a posek. How do you know that? Because he told you in the beginning of his commentary to the Torah. If you take a look at source number 4, look at what he says. It's a famous piece, but people don't always think about the implications. He explains how he came to his conclusions of halacha. He says, V'lachin iskamti b'daiti ki li yos shloshes amudei ha'hara asher habayit beis Yisrael nishan aleim b'hara osehem. He says, I have decided that since the three pillars of halachic rulings upon whom the house of Israel rests, those three are halo hema harif, v'harambam, v'harosh zal, right? Rif, Rambam, Rosh. Those are the big three. So amarti yelibi, I said to myself, shebemakom sheshnayim mehem maskimim ledea achas, that where two of them agree, where it's two against one, I added the bold, nifsok halacha kamosam, will follow the majority. Imlo b'mitzis mekamosh kochach me Yisrael lo rubam cholkin al adasahi, except where most, if not all, poskim disagree. So I'm going to follow 2 versus 1 among the big three, unless everybody thinks that the two are wrong, in which case I won't follow the two either. V'lachein pashat ha-minag behefach, such that the minag has become not to follow the two.
But it doesn't say if his opinion is the sole, like he disputes with them, then he wouldn't follow them.
Right.
Doesn't a Moshe bring that done if someone asked him that he wanted to make rock, but he couldn't?
I'm getting to that, Yuva. That is in here. Yes, it is.
Yeah,
you'll see it.
Because that would make it sound like even if you disagree with the word.
Yes, correct. Yes, 25 is the one you want. Thank you. But yes, it does make it sound like that.
What about a post-it? Can a post-it steer you to leniency? You go to a post-it. The reason I'm asking that is because Mark Shapiro brought down that the film with Ivy Yosef, which focuses on Norba. Difficult situation with Kishas and stuff like that. They had a set bezel of 3 people.
Yeah.
But they knew the 2 of them were Machmir, and that's why they say, wait until we have so and so with me. So
I'll tell you a story. This goes back quite a few years. If you know Rav Daniel Feldman, Daniel Tzvi Feldman, he's written a few of his sermons. So he was a friend of mine, my roommate in yeshiva, and I went to his wedding. But I was already a rabbi in a shul. And a very difficult end-of-life type of shayla had come up. And I went to the wedding, and I saw Rav Schachter at the wedding. And I asked Rav Schachter the question, and Rav Schachter pointed to Shalom Rosner at the wedding. And he said to him, you know, you can get Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Avraham's phone number, or email address, whatever, from him, and that way you can contact him to ask him the question. And that's what I did. I went over to Shalom, and he gave me his father's information, who gave me Dr. Abraham. And I went to Rabbi Dr. Abraham with a question. I ended up going in with many questions over the years. Last year, when Rav Schachter was in town to visit, you know, I asked him the question which had been on my mind for a while, which is, Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Avram is a brilliant Talmud Chacham. He has all his shaylos to many big poskim in Eretz Yisrael, and he's fantastic. However, he disagrees, in particular, on end-of-life issues with Rav Schachter. He takes the Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach or Eliezer Waldenberg type of an approach. So I said, he sent me to somebody, but he doesn't agree with you. And Rav Schachter's response was that as long as he is a Yerei Shamayim, that's good enough. He doesn't have to agree with me.
So doesn't that contradict the source of miracle that we're talking about?
I don't think so.
Here's
the leniency. Right, so he wasn't sending me to him because he's lenient. In fact, he's stricter than Rav Schachter on end-of-life issues, actually, and so to a certain extent. But the point wasn't that. The point that I drew from it is the question of whether the posek is reliable is not so much does he agree with so-and-so as is he a Talmid Chacham, does he know what he's doing, and is he a Yerei Shamayim in it.
But if that's a given, that's why I'm asking, can a posting, he sends you to people that are leaning all the time.
Shlomo Zalman is sent to Waldenberg.
Yeah.
He couldn't say why
can't you
send people to Waldenberg?
If they can't form shop for you, why can't you form shop for yourself?
I wouldn't know where to begin with forum shopping. That's the difference. You have to know the case, and you have to know what the set of acceptable options are, I think. And there's more to be said. I don't think it's simple and straightforward. But I'm going to beg out for right now in order to get to more of Mar Da'asra, but I think it's a good point. What we have so far is that there isn't an imperative of picking a single halachic authority as your posek, as long as you aren't going to take contradictory positions. It may not be a good idea to play this game, because you could end up with contradictory positions without knowing what you're doing.
Isn't also, we live in a city like Toronto, where our main hosting the city is Rabbi Miller, and all the rabbis of different schools also go to Rabbi Miller.
So he's asking a very good question.
And then in other cities, they don't have top hostings.
Right. So I'll tell you what, hold the question until we go through Mara Da'asra, because that's part of what we need to discuss here. It's a good question. So, the nature of Mara Da'asra. So I brought you a couple of examples. You can see many examples in the Gemara about that seem to fly in the face of what I've said. That seem to say that even though there's, you know, as Fortuner insists, no imperative of you have to pick a posek, nonetheless, the local authority is going to hold sway. If you take a look at source number 5, one example, the Gemara in Shabbos about moving the lamps on Shabbos. Rabbi Avo, ki ikla lahasid of Yeshua ben Levi of Metal del Shraga. When Rabbi Avo would go to the area where Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was in authority, he would move lamps on Shabbos. Ki ikla hasid of Yochanan, he went to Rabbi Yochanan's lamp, lo have a Metal del Shraga, and there he wouldn't do it. So the Gemara says, Manavshach, I don't understand. If he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on Muktzah, so Le'avik Rabbi Yehuda, he should follow Rabbi Yehuda. And if he follows Rabbi Shimon on Muktzah, Le'avik Rabbi Shimon, let him follow Rabbi Shimon. To which the Gemara says, La'olam Rabbi Shimon Svirulei, he held Mutter. He followed Rabbi Shimon personally. But he wouldn't do it in Rabbi Yochanan's land, because Rabbi Yochanan did not agree. And that's a simple and straightforward presentation of it. But to show it even stronger, because Muktzah, you can say, Muktzah is a Derabbanan, it's this weird in-between category. We'll show you being lenient on a De'oraisa. Take a look at source number 6. Tanu Rabbanan, Braisa says, another famous one, the case in Rabbi Lazar Demila. B'mekomosh Rabbi Eliezer, how you course him eitz in lasos, pechem and lasos, barzel b'shavas. In the territory of Rabbi Eliezer, they would cut wood in order to make coals in order to form iron on Shabbos. I always read this and assumed that it was not, it was a guzma. It was some kind of an exaggeration, like, you're really going to make the meal a knife on Shabbos? But then I saw Tosfos in Yevamos, where this also appears. In the Yevamos Yadal, it actually says they did this on purpose to show love for the mitzvah. In other words, Tosfos believes this actually happened. A baby was born on Shabbos, so they knew bris following Shabbos, and they would go into Shabbos without a mila knife, planning that they were going to make the fire and so on, because the Rabbi Eliezer's shita was that you can do all the backup steps in order to be able to do the bris on Shabbos, and they did it out of love for the mitzvah. Where Rabbi Yossi Aglili lived, they would eat poultry and milk. The Gemara then says, Levi Yikol of Yosef Rishba. Levi went to the house of Yosef the trapper. Krivu le Resha de Tafsa Bechelba. And they brought him the head of a certain bird in milk. Poultry and milk. Lo achal, he wouldn't eat it. Kiasla Kamed the Rebbe. Comes to Rabbi, Amarle, Amailo Tisham Tinu. He says, why didn't you put them in Chayrim? What are they doing, poultry and milk? So Amarle, I said, Rabbi Yudah ben Becerra, he said, what was this supposed to do? That's Rabbi Yudah ben Becerra's land. Vamina, Doma Darash Luk Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And I thought maybe he passed him like Rabbi Yossi Aglili. The point here being, the emphasis that I'm bringing is actually the first part about the Mila knife on Shabbos. You're talking D'Oraisa now. You're not talking D'Rabbanan's poultry and milk, Mukta, whatever. You're talking about a D'Oraisa, and nonetheless saying, he says mutter, we follow mutter. Where he is, that's the rule. One more source with it, the Gemara in source number 7. It's an Eruv Chatzeros discussion. You know that if you have separate yards, they each are going to require, you'll have to set up an Eruv Chatzeros in order to be able to transport between them on Shabbos. So Itmar, the following case. Kotel Shebein Shtei Chatzeros Shenafal. There's a wall between the two yards such that each one has its own identity. The wall collapses, I added in the bracketed word, it collapsed on Shabbos. So Rav Omar in Metalton Boela Barba Amos. So Rav says, I don't care that you had a wall when Shabbos started. Doesn't make a difference. The wall collapses on Shabbos. You're only allowed to transport 4 amos now in the yard. Ushmuel Amar Zemetaltal Ad Igra Machitza, Vezemetaltal Ad Igra Machitza. Shmuel disagrees and he says, no, each one can carry up until, can transport up until the spot where the wall is. You can't go between the two yards, you can't traverse that spot, because that wasn't part of your yard in which you made your Eruv. But you can go right up to it. So, and then the Gemara says, Vahadu Rav Lav Beferish Hitmar. When Rav said this, the truth is Rav didn't actually say this explicitly. It was something we deduced. Elami Chuala Hitmar. It was by deduction. De Rav Shmuel Abayasvi Ba'u Chatzir. What happened was, we had the following story. Rav and Shmuel are sitting in a certain yard. Nava Guda De Beini Beini. And the fence between the yards collapsed. Amar Lu Shmuel Shkolu Glima Negidu Ba. Shmuel said, put up a coat there where the fence had been. Adrina Rav La'ape. Rav turns away. The Gemara goes on to explain. Shmuel Abelitz Nusab Alma. Shmuel said there was no need to have another fence put up at all. The only reason he put up a coat was for privacy purposes. That's all. The Rav, so the Gemara says, well, Rav, you hold that you need a wall. Is virale da asir, if you believe, Rav, that you're not allowed to transport there because there's no wall, lamele, why didn't he say something? Why didn't he just turn his head away? Asri to Shmuel, Hava, is Shmuel's terrain. He couldn't say anything. Then why did Rav turn his face away? So the neighbor Shmuel severely. He didn't want anybody to think he agreed with Shmuel. On the other hand, I don't have to. I may not be allowed to disagree with you, but I don't have to endorse your position either. So therefore, he did something that would demonstrate to anybody who was looking at him that he wasn't in favor, even though he wasn't going to speak out. So we see here not even bringing your own view against the view of the Maradasa when you believe the Maradasa is wrong. You think he's being leaned, and you think it's inappropriate. Not only that, the Maradasa wins even if he is in the minority. Whether he is stricter than the majority or whether he's more lenient than the majority doesn't make a difference. I brought you source number 8 from the Ran. B'nei makom echad chayav lino kedivrei gidolehen. The people of one place have to act according to their great leaders. V'afilu echad derabim cholkim alayim and chalukin alayim. Even if the majority is against them, and that's ruled by the Rama in source number 9. He says the end of source number 9. V'mhaya minak b'ir lahakil. If there's a practice of being lenient locally, v'bnei shachacham echad haralem kach, because a certain rabbi said so, holchin achar daito, you follow his position. So the question you have to ask is, what is the source of the authority of the Maradasra? If you tell me I am not obligated to follow a particular posek, then why does the Maradasra hold sway such that everybody is supposed to follow him? And even if what he says disagrees with what the rest of the halachic world is saying. Nonetheless, just because he lives here, somehow I'm obligated to do what he says. What would you suggest is the rationale for having to follow his position?
Respect,
one possibility. What else?
I think it might have to do with society.
Meaning?
Meaning, you had smaller towns, you didn't have communications were not what they are today, maybe they can, you know, tie together messages for what other people are holding. I mean, basically, to run a system under those circumstances, to follow the law was in your city, the word, and ideologically, it was a traditional society. It's not like today we have a different ideological groups within Orthodoxy. I just don't think it follows what took place then to today's situation.
I'm not sure I'd agree that that ideological splits are new. I mean, we find them in the Gemara.
No,
Rabbi Zera wants to make Aliyah. Rabbi Yehuda, his posek and his mentor, says you're not allowed to. So what does he do? He stops going to Shir so he can make Aliyah without Rabbi Yehuda rebuking him for doing so. That's not
that's halachic/ideological.
No?
What was the ideology that he was in?
Whether the Gimel Shavuos were still in force or not. You can say that's pure halacha. Yeah, that was Rabbi Yehuda's position, was that the Gimel Shavuos are binding. That this is Ola B'chola.
It's interesting, because aside from the Gimel Shavuos, no one ever brings that down as a halacha.
Yeah, no, I mean, Kufiyot Aleph and Ksuvos. Yeah, that's...
I know, the Gemara brings it. I'm saying no one brings it down as a halacha. So,
that's another question. Yes. Who needs to explain the Rambam? But one possibility is that it's...
I don't think that was an ideological position back then.
You can make the argument that it's community, whether you view it as sociological community or general community, or there's a third argument you can make, which is actually the first one I'm going to start with, which is that this is the way halacha works. The way halacha works is... Mara da Astra wins. So take a look in your at the sheets here. Take a look at source number 10. In terms of? Which one of those three was a Mara da Astra for the Beis Yosef a few hundred years later? None of them. I mean, I'm going to come back to that point, because that's not always true. There is an idea of Mara da Astra, even across time. But we're not there yet.
He assumed, he accepted the authority.
But he doesn't have a Mara da Astra.
He is the Mara da Astra.
He felt empowered to go with Yachin among the three pillars as he
only because everybody else did.
That there was a road, this Manazet.
Yes, that's correct.
So, you back to the same principle, it's possible that road chacham in your time, here the Ramas says, well, not the road chacham, if there's one chacham, you can ask him like that, one chacham. But according to how the Beis Yosef Reim did, arguably, if other chacham disagreed with the one chacham, then theoretically, you'd be obligated to go according to the Beis Yosef.
I think we're going off track, because that is setting the shoulder lower of its general application, not a specific shine, which is what we're talking about now.
This is true. It certainly will be true within the position of the Rama. It's a good point, because the Rama discusses the fact that what we're about to see, what we're going to say, well, see the Gemara here, and then I'll explain to you what we're about to see. But see the Gemara first, in number 10. Tana Rabbanan, Braisa says, Hanisha l'chacham v'timei lo yisha l'chacham v'yitayir. You ask the Rabbi a shayla, he said, Tamei, you don't get to then ask it to somebody else for him to say tahor. L'chacham v'asar, you ask l'chacham and he said, asar lo yisha l'chacham v'yatir, you can't ask someone else, I'll say mutter. Hayushnayim, what if there are two chachamim there simultaneously? Echad mitamei v'echad mitayir. One says, Tamei, what's his tarach, and osir v'echad matir? if one of them is greater than the other in terms of chachma and minyan. So translating chachma and minyan is interesting, but beyond the scope of what we need to deal with right now. When the Rambam deals with this in terms of batei din and gadol chachma over minyan, so he says chachma is accepted as the person's wisdom, and minyan means the number of people who follow that that based in. There are other ways that it can be approached. It doesn't matter for our purposes right now. But he says if one of them is clearly greater, follow him. Vim lav, but if not, halachachar machmir. Then just go with whichever one is stricter. You have two in front of you. They disagree. Go with the stricter one. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha says something you're more familiar with. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha omer bishal tara halachachar machmir. He says what you have, if you have two poskim, and one says aser, one says mutter, this is a safek. So if it's a deoraisa, you're dealing with a biblical matter, go lachomra. Bishal sofrim, if it's a derabbanan, halachachar amekel, you go leniently. And Rabbi Yosef says, yeah, that's the halacha. So on this, going back to the point that you made in the Shulchan Aruch, I believe it's the Ramah who says it, he says, this is talking about asking the same shaila. Meaning, I brought the liver, or whatever, you know, thing I thought might have a treifa in it, to the rabbi, and the rabbi gave me an answer, and I didn't like the answer, and I had to go to another rabbi. However, if on Tuesday I went to the rabbi with this liver, and the rabbi paskin, and then on Thursday I have another case that looks the same to me, I am fully entitled to go to another rabbi. It's only this specific item, which is going back to Joey's point about distinguishing between writing a Shulchan Aruch for abstract psak as opposed to dealing with the case at hand. So what the Shulchan Aruch seems to say here is that the first posek to weigh in is going to win. You asked one, you don't get to ask another. Now, you might point out, someone has to point out, the fact that we only dealt with where the first posek is machmir. What if the first posek said mutter? Are you also not allowed to go to somebody else? So flip the page number 11 to the Ritva. By the way, I'm going to pass around the sheet. We realized after last week that we didn't have email addresses to be able to send out the marmakomos to everybody in advance. We only had the people who Rabbi Ziering remembered having been there. So if you don't mind putting in an email address, we can send you the marmakomos. That would be great. If you don't want to, also great. But I'm going to start with Mikey and then pass it around. Need a pencil? Good. Okay. So the infinite supply. So the Ritva on this, if you take a look at source number 11, says Lo tema lo yisha lechatchila davka umishum kavod arisha. He says when you read this Gemara that says if you ask one, you shouldn't ask another. Don't make the mistake of thinking that means don't ask lechatchila because you don't want to offend the first one you asked. Ela filu b'tiyevet, even after the fact, imshal, if you asked the second one, ein taharaso v'hetero shel achron klum, his psak is meaningless. Dekevan dekama chacham, since the first one was a chacham, v'roi la'ora, he was suited to rule, kishahora alav le'isro, letuma shavye chaticha de'isura. When he gave his psak, he made the item usur. And in the Gemara in Shabbos, the Ritva makes the comment there, and he invokes what I saw Jeff mouthing before, source number 12, the Ritva writes, Umekomo hayu osin kamoso, talking about Rabbi Eliezer, Lekayim lo sasur min hadavar, asher yidu lechayim inu small, the Torah says, do not stray from their psak. Now, I mentioned, this isn't only where the first posek said asur. Take a look at source number 13. And what the Ramah has to say, it's not only the Ramah, but he's a good example. He says, "V'afilu im hitir harishon ukvar chala hora'aso ein l'sheni le'asor mikoach shikul hadas." He says, even if the first posek said mutter, that is now binding. Just like we say that if the first posek says aser, now it's an aser item. If the first posek said mutter, it is now a mutter item. And therefore, you won't be allowed to ask somebody else. This comes out of the Rosh in Avodah Zarah Aleph Gimel.
What does he mean by mikoch shikul hadas? As opposed to what?
As opposed to if you think you made a mistake in Dvar Mishnah. Yeah, which we're going to have to mention also. But the idea is that there actually is a psak created by the first one, mutter or aser, and that is automatically binding because that's the way psak works. The Chevel Nachal Aser, Rabbi Yaakov Epstein, in source number 14, says that to do otherwise would be called mara halacha b'makom rabba, which the Gemara is very strict about. You can't give a psak in the place where your Rebbe is. Now, this doesn't mean the Mara da Asra is always right. Actually, this takes me back to what Jeff noted in the Ramah. if he's wrong in what we call a Dvar Mishnah, the basic facts of how halacha is done, then you're allowed to challenge him and he can be overruled. But it has to be like a basic factual error, not just, you know, an opinion. That's an important distinction. But that's the first approach. The first approach to how Mara D'Hasra works is by giving a psak, he has now closed the playing field. This is halal. Second approach is very different. The second approach is the honor approach. It's about his kavod. If you look at the Rashba in source number 15, he says, if there was a certain rabbi in their community and he taught them, so they follow his positions. Anytime you have a community in which they always follow a certain posik, he says, in a place where they all follow the Rif. Now this is the Rashba talking, and I did you a favor by putting his century on here, right? When did the Rif live? Yeah, it's a 10th into the 11th century, the Rif. The Rashba is long after. I mean, he writes Zal, that's your tip-off. The Rif is long gone. He says, where they decide, we always follow the Rif. Or they say, whatever Mishnah Torah says, that's what we do. They made them into their rebbeim, even though they're long gone. However, he says, in a case like that, where everybody decided that this book is our Mara D'Asra, and then you have a chacham there who is of a caliber such that he can rule in halacha, and he says, you know what, I see a reason to prohibit, he's allowed to say, I'm not going to do that which they permit. Because that's not really their Rebbe. Why? He says the law of Mara D'Asra, says the Rashba, is about the kavod of the posig, and therefore, where he's already in the Olam HaEmes, he's not here anymore. If I decide that I'm not following him, his feelings aren't hurt. It's not a big deal. But where you have a real live Mara D'Asra, it is indeed, according to the Rashba, an issue of kavod. That seems to be the position of the Rama as well, because the Rama brings the law of Mara D'Asra, aside from the Choshen Mishpat reference that I brought you here, where he's dealing more with Beis Din potentially, but he deals with it in Yeredeya Reish Mem Beis. That's what I brought you in source number 13. That's in Hilchos Kavod Harav. That's where he brings the laws of Mara D'Asra. The Rama brings it in the laws of Kavod Harav. So that tells you that that his position, like the position of the Rashba, is that it's really about kavod. I should note, just because I found it interesting, that there's also another issue of protecting the Mara D'Asra involved that the Aruch HaShulchan mentions in source number 16. He says, "B'chol yir v'yir memanim rav lahoros horos." He says, in every city they appoint a rabbi who's going to paskin. V'asr l'mishahu l'hasig gvulo b'hora. No one's allowed to do hasagas gvul. You're not allowed to overstep his boundary. He says, you know, they make a living off of this. If you're going to now set up shop and you're going to start answering shilos, you're going to take away from their parnasa. So the Aruch HaShulchan is concerned about a different type of protection for the existing rabbi. But your second philosophy of Mara D'Asra is that it's about the kavod of the Mara D'Asra. Your first approach is, this is halacha. He paskin, it's done. Your second approach is to say that it's the kavod issue. The third approach is that it's the unity discussion, the unity of the community. They accepted him, and that's who they should follow. The Tashbates in source number 17 says this. He says, "V'mavar al devarav." He says, He says, if somebody trespassed the word of the Mara D'Asra, and he asked a shayla, and they permitted him to do this, he says, I have news for you. The heter is not a heter. You can't do it. You're not allowed to choose to violate the what the community does. And if somebody does that, he ends up in cherem for doing so. You're not entitled to violate that which the community has accepted. This is brought in the Kesef Mishnah as well in Hilchos Mamrim in Perek Beis Halach Aleph. It's brought by Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch and Shemesh Marpe. It's brought by Rav Shlomo Yisraeli. I brought you an example from Rav Moshe Feinstein. He deals with a case which, in the interests of time, I'm going to abbreviate, but you can see the case in source number 18. He dealt with a case in which there was a community where they didn't have enough money to hire a rabbi. There was somebody local who was a Yodea Sefer. He knew what he was talking about, and they went to him with their shilos. But it was always with the understanding that one day they'd have enough money together, and then they'd hire a rabbi. And then the question became, one day they had enough money, and they wanted to go hire a rabbi, and he said, what do you mean? I have a chazaka. I've been answering shilos all these years for you. So the question was, now what do you do? And Rav Moshe's position was that the community has accepted him, and they are not allowed to go hire somebody else. He said, if you have a problem with him, then take him to Beis Din.
Today, how do you define community?
That's where we're going. We're not there yet. But that's where we're going with this. But that's the position that the community has accepted this person, and that's what gives him the authority as Mara da Asra. There's a possibility of making the argument that this is from Losis Godidu. Right? We are told, Banim Atem L'Hashem Alav Keichem, Losis Godidu, you are children to Hashem your God, you shall not cut yourselves. And one of the understandings of cut yourselves means not to cut yourself socially into different subgroups. We're all going to go off in different directions. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, in source number 19, that includes, Shalo Yushne Batei Din and Be'ir Achas, you can't have two Batei Din. Good luck, Rambam. But you can't have two Batei Din in one city. Zen Noe Kimin Agzev, Zen Noe Kimin Agacher, which following different approaches. Because imagine that, it causes fights. So writes the Rambam, and the Beis Yosef in his Chuvos Av Kasrocha mentions this, the Ramadas, I brought it over here in source number 20, that you have to avoid this. Rav Chaim Voloshin wrote this in Keter Rosh Lamed Zayin. He said division of practice leads to division of the heart. Rav Chaim David Alevi and Shut Mayim Chaim, they all mention this issue. The Netziv has it too. So we have three different philosophies. One philosophy is what the Mara da Asra says is psak. Second philosophy is it's about the covet of the Mara da Asra. Third approach is it's about community unity. There are serious differences between those. And in terms of practice, first of all, does the Mara da Asra have to be somebody who is the source of Torah for the community? Does he have to be the Rebbe of the community? What if this is a community where people can go anywhere and everywhere to hear a shir? They may not know the Mara da Asra at all. They see him in shul on Shabbos, and that's their kesher. Are they obligated now to follow his psak? It depends on which reason you take. Right? It depends on which reason. The Ma'arib ben Lev, if you take a look at source number 21, writing in the 16th century, he says, Davka bimehem, shebechol ir ve'ir, hayalahem rav echad shayim alamdam. He says, you know what? Mara da Asra was an issue. Back in the day, when you had one Rebbe, he taught them all their Torah, and that was it. He was the Rav Muvok, and he was your posek, and that was it. And that's how you had a community where they all followed Rav, and you had a community where they all followed Shmuel, because Rav was the head of the yeshiva there, and that was who everybody learned from. And Shmuel was the head of the yeshiva there, and that's who everybody learned from. And he says, nowadays, Aval Anu Bismanim Ha'elu, Kol HaPoskim V'Rabbanim Asherim Me'am Anu Shosim Heim Raboseinu. So now we have a million rabbis, and a million poskim. And they're all our rabbis, and there's no such thing. Ma'ariv ben Lev's position is there's no such thing as a Mara da Asra once you have multiple sources of Torah for a community. That's consistent with the idea that the Mara da Asra is simply the source of psak, and that's the way psak works. However, if you accept the view that it's about kavod, maybe they still owe him kavod if he's the posek for the community. If everybody follows this rabbi for his halachos, even if they don't go to his shir, then maybe again you're bound by him by his word as well. It depends on which argument you take, Rafi.
Yeah. First of all,
didn't
cover somebody does this really mean that you're view success. That's what you're talking about. Huh. Second of all, my question is, as you mentioned, you know, now you have a million rabbis. How do you follow a rabbi without inevitably shopping around? In today's society.
You mean in order to find one? I understand what you mean.
I'm sorry, not only in order to find one, but also, for example, let's say you have a question on a certain topic that your rabbi is asking you questions to, doesn't have an answer.
Ah, so that raises another question, which is the specialization question. Right? What if this isn't his specialty? We live in a time when it's considered normal for Rabbanim to have specialties. You know, this one is known for Taharas HaMishpacha. You go to him with your Taharas HaMishpacha questions. You know, this one is medical, and you go to him with your medical questions. Frankly, I don't think it's a good thing, because I think in order to really know what you're doing in any one area, you need to know a whole lot about other areas, and I think you can miss things otherwise. Nonetheless, the practice has bled from medicine into Rabbanus, and that's the way the world works.
I think that may be true, but I also think the reverse is true. If you don't have specialization, so much knowledge, it's impossible for a generalist of anything, I would say, to properly give advice.
And that's entirely possible as well. I mean, I think it can be done in halacha easier than in other areas, because the truth of the matter is that in most areas of halacha, you can quantify and you can list the number of sort of normal questions that people ask.
But that might be in halacha, when you have to apply the outside knowledge, whether it's psychology.
That's another right. Understood. Understood. Another question that will lead us to distinctions between the different reasons for Marad Asra. Can there be a Marad Asra who doesn't live locally? Or who doesn't live anymore at all? The Rashba thought so. Right? The Rashba thought the Marad Asra is the Rif, is the Rambam, whoever the community has said they accept. Although he does accept the idea that others will be allowed to disagree with that Marad Asra because he doesn't live anymore. But that fits with the idea that Marad Asra is really a function of the community's unity, not an issue of respect, you know, for the Marad Asra. What if the Marad Asra hasn't voiced a position on a topic? Question comes up, and I don't know of any position that the rabbi has taken on the topic. So do I have to go to him and ask him a question? Or can I say, you know what, I don't know anything from his position, so therefore I can ask whoever I want. I'm not insulting him, because I didn't, he didn't say anything. By doing something different, I'm not necessarily disagreeing. I didn't ignore your question before, Ravi, about maybe not listening to him isn't an act of disrespect. I think the assumption that all the poskim here are making is that it is. That to do differently than he says is considered a statement of, I don't accept him. That's the way that it's viewed within these in general. We're going to see a different point of view shortly, but that is the way that it's classically taken. So if I take the view, the Chevel Nachalasso actually takes the position in source number 22, and he says that, Samchut HaMara Da'asra, the authority of the Mara Da'asra, is in all areas. However, when you're dealing with a particular subtopic in which he hasn't voiced an opinion, Rasha and Lishol is Misha Rotz, and they can ask whoever they want. That seems to go with the view that it's about kavod. And as long as he didn't say anything, it's not a violation of his kavod. I don't know exactly how long I have, by the way. And then when... Okay. So which view you take about Marad Asra in general is going to color your approach to some of the questions that we have. Yeah.
You're referring to Marad Asra. As long as he doesn't say something, then he's not
correct. Well, you can go with the approach that it's... I agree with you. Yeah, I think it could fit within that view as well. Yeah. So that brings us to the question of our own day. Now that we have a basic understanding of philosophies of Marad Asra, what about today? So generally speaking, there are many poskim who seriously endorse the concept of Marad Asra and seem to ignore all the changes that society has undergone. The Rav Yosef Efrayim, or Greenblatt, in source number 23, has a one-line response. When someone asks them a question about Mechayev to follow the Marad Asra, he says, Lo yocho livsov neged Marad Asra, ki das Marad Asra sham mekamo livsok. He says, that's it. The question was sent to him from elsewhere, but it's an interesting possibility. Rabbi Yehuda Bracha wrote a work called Birkas Yehuda, and in Chelek Beis Yerudei Yudalit, he quotes you many Achronim who believe in it. He himself is very clearly a believer in Marad Asra. The problem is that there are three issues you have to contend with. Issue number one is that communities, and I said this in the beginning, communities often identify ideologically. or based on their roots, and not necessarily geographically at all. I don't view the people who live around me as my community. My community is the people who I was in yeshiva with, who live now scattered in all sorts of different places. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein makes this point and suggests that there is such a thing as a Marad Asra based on an ideological community. Take a look at source number 24, please. From an article, Legitimization of Modernity. He says, the definition of the relevant community, however, is murky. The Gemara speaks of locale, but it seems strange that geography should be the sole determinant. Would an enclave of Judean emigres in Galil be permitted to eat chicken fried in butter? Right, because that was where Rabbi Yossi Aglili lived. Would only residents of 12th century Egypt be entitled to rely upon the Rambam's minority kulot? It seems far more likely that other factors, ethnic identity, or above all, spiritual and ideological fealty, should carry no less weight. I believe this is clearly suggested by the Rashba, and that's what we saw above in number 14. This position of the Rashba about the community accepting the Rif or accepting the Rambam. Oh, I misnumbered it. I wonder why I did that. Okay, I must have added something after I wrote 14. Sorry, 15 it is. If that's my mistake for the Shira, I'm in good shape. Yeah. So I don't think so, because I think you have to distinguish between following a psak and the issue of marisayin and how you conduct yourself in a community. In other words, I think there is a chadre chadarim discussion, you know, in terms of what people are able to see and be aware of, and what if you do it behind closed doors type of a thing. I don't think that you will be entitled to say, well, my Marad Asra lives elsewhere, and he is the one I am following, and therefore, b'fnei am ve'eda, I am allowed to do whatever I like. I think you're still going to need to respect the community's conduct.
So that's not, you wouldn't get that from me.
Well, the excerpt that I pulled out of his article, correct. I recommend the article as a whole, as I do with everything he writes. But the point that the community can say, you know, it's not only about the one guy who's living off on his own in an island in the middle of a community of different-minded people. The same thing happens with a group who identify with a particular place. Sorry?
Yes.
Okay, so if they wanted to follow Breuer's positions, you know, in some place. Yeah, that would be a potential example. But that's number one. Number two, second major difference, is that the Marad Asra in our communities is often not the teacher of Torah for the community. Like the Mari Ben Lev, who we saw before, he took the position that there's no such thing as Marad Asra today. He said the only place in which you have Marad Asra is financial matters. Because now financial matters, people are entitled to accept whatever they want. So if we decide that we're going to follow so-and-so, even if his position is not binding, now it's binding for us because we made that decision. But on Yisr V'Heter, he says, no, you can't follow the Marad Asra. You don't have a right to follow the Marad Asra. You have to follow whatever the majority view is. Because he says the rabbi of the shul is very often not the one who gives all the shiurim and teaches people the Torah. Rav Moshe Feinstein weighed in on this, and this is your B'nai Brak case. You've waited very patiently, Joey. Take a look at number 25. He writes to somebody who wants to move to B'nai Brak, but feels like he can't, because he often disagrees with the positions of the Chazon Ish. So he says, "B'dvar she'yesh lecha izah chashash lekbo mekomcha b'Bnei Brak." You're concerned about establishing your location in B'nai Brak. Mitzad she'betoch divrei Torah ika pa'am she'ata omer shelo k'divrei Chazon Ish zatzal. You're worried because you don't always agree with the Chazon Ish. Lo muvan shum chashash b'zeh. So he says, I don't understand why this is an issue. Va'adarava zeu kvodo. He says, that's the honor of the Chazon Ish. They mention his view in Torah, and they examine his words. Even if the conclusion of the Chacham who examines what the Chazon Ish said is to conclude, yeah, I don't agree with him, the cover of the Chazon Ish is that you're discussing what he's saying. And that goes back to Ravi's question as well. V'lo ala klal al das ha-chazon ish zatzal shelo yimtsu talmidei chachamim sheyiflegu alav v'lo shaych sheyakbid al zed ha-adrabah ha-emes v'ashol me'ahalis. It's just the opposite. So the chazon ish would be very angry if people were just to say, we just take what he says and that's it, and we don't discuss it, and we don't pursue emes. He says, that's silly. So Rav Moshe's position very clearly is, the chazon ish didn't teach you. It may be that people locally follow his psak, but you're allowed to dispute his position, and Rav Moshe doesn't even mention the words maradasra in the tshuva. It's not an issue. It doesn't bother him in the least.
But clearly he's not talking about the person.
You have to know what you're doing. Correct. Now, Rav Avadya disagreed. Rav Avadya quotes the Mari Ben Lev and says, absolutely not. Take a look at number 26. He quotes you the Mari Ben Lev, and the first two lines are basically just the quotes. So I'm jumping to the third line. Ulam, he says, however, Pashat Hamina Bazek Kedas HaPoskim HaNizkarim Leil. He says, the practice is to follow the other poskim I've mentioned. Shegam Ata Yechol Meleches Achar Marada Asra. That even now, you can choose to follow the Marada Asra, even if it's he disagrees with the majority. Ukma Shekasim Aran Ba'avkas Rocha, like Rabbi Yosef Kara wrote, Shekei Noagumi Mos Olam Lifso Kedivai Harambam Bimakomos Ela Shekivlu Ale the position of the Beis Yosef and the position adopted by the Chavadas is that despite the fact that we don't learn our Torah from the Marada Asra, nonetheless a community can choose to accept him, and that's it, because he takes the view that Marada Asra is fundamentally about community. It's not really about did he teach us all of our Torah. That's his position. I'm going to ask you to hold the question for a minute because I want to make sure to get to the last point here. So what we're seeing so far is that number one, there are poskim who endorse the concept of Marada Asra. That's number one, despite apparent changes in the way communities are run. We're seeing that community has an amorphous identity today. It's not simply geographic, and that, as Rav Aaron writes, seems to be fairly straightforward, and therefore it's not simply where do you live, but rather it's with whom do you associate, understanding that you may need to worry about concerns for violating communal norms. The Marada Asra today is not necessarily the teacher of Torah for the community, and it's going to depend on the way you look at the role of Marada Asra. The position of Rav Avadya is it doesn't matter. The community can still accept somebody even if he wasn't, because he looks at the community as the driver of Marada Asra. On the other end, if you look at Marada Asra as being about the kavod that is due to him, then the answer may well be that's not due to somebody who happens to, you know, give Piskei Halacha, but isn't the source of all Torah for the community. So it's really going to depend on what your driving force is. The last point, Israel. The rabbi there may be appointed politically and not necessarily be accepted by the community. So here you have a very interesting convergence of two positions. The position of the Stipler and the position of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who both contend that an appointed rabbinate that the community chooses not to follow is not binding. This is not a Marada Asra. The Stipler was asked this question. It's a very funny, maybe tragic is a better word, but nonetheless. The question that he was asked was, for the elections in some year, he had campaigned that people should vote Haredi. There was a certain set of parties and the people should vote for it. And somebody asked him a Shaila and said, well, you know, the Vad of whatever has decreed that you're not allowed to participate in the elections. You're not allowed. So how can you say that we should vote for such and such? You're not supposed to participate at all. So look at what he says in 27. It's the beginning of his tshuva. He says, "Vaday tainahi." It's a good point. Aval eina mechayeves ela chavrei haida charedit v'lo kol toshevei Yerushalayim. But I have news for you. That doesn't bind everybody who lives in Yerushalayim. The people who choose to follow the Eidah Charedis are the ones who are bound by it. Kemen shlo nivcharu al pi rov shomrei Torah shebeir, because they weren't picked. The Eidah Charedis wasn't picked by the majority of shomrei Torah in the city. And this goes back to the question of how you define community. There is a collective that says we are going in one direction. So then they are a community. And what they say doesn't bind other people who are there. They see themselves as a community, so for them it's binding. It doesn't bind other people. That's the position that the Stipler takes. He says it's only the group that accepts them that's actually going to be bound. bound by it. In this case, they're not appointed by a government position. In this case, they're appointed by whoever considers themselves the leaders of the community. But the same thing is the position that Ravaron takes in source number 28. He says, and this is very sharp, I had to leave it for the end so that people who were, you know, had wanted to fall asleep could fall asleep first. The contribution of the Rabbanut HaRashit to the administration and supervision of areas crucial to halachic existence is obvious. Equally self-evident, however, is the fact that as a quintessentially rabbinic authority, whether as spiritual leadership in the broader sense or with regard to the specific area of Psak, it now carries relatively limited weight. It has a role, but in terms of Psak, it's limited. Secularists and Haredim largely ignore it, while the non-Orthodox actively fight it. Its status in the Dati Leumi community is more secure, but even there, many offer it little more than honorific lip service, having recourse to it only at their convenience. Moreover, as it has become increasingly regarded as the virtual patrimony of a dominant faction, its base of support has narrowed, and the number of those who truly look to it for guidance has dwindled. Even within the world of Yeshivot Hezder, there are not many who, confronted with conflicting psakim of the Rabbanut HaRashit and Sefer Shlomo Zalman Orbach, would routinely prefer the former. He says, the truth of the matter is that people don't follow it, and therefore you can't make the argument that it has the status of a Mara D'Astra. In the footnote, he says more about it, and you can see it there. But this seems to be conceded in general by the various modern Sfarim on the topic of Mara D'Astra. Even Rabbi Yehuda Bracha, who I mentioned before in the Birkas Yehuda, who is a staunch endorser of the idea of Mara D'Astra, concedes this point and says, you can't really make the argument that because someone was appointed by the government, that makes them a Mara D'Astra. There has to be that communal piece to it, although he does advocate not disputing with them publicly because of the Chilul Hashem that it can create. That he does say. But the upshot of what we've said is, number one, there is no imperative other than practicality to pick a particular posek in general. Nonetheless, Mara D'Astra has authority, whether we say because that's the way Psak is determined, when he says something it goes, or whether because of his kavod as the teacher of Torah, or whether it's because of the community's acceptance. And when it comes to looking at the world of our day, we have to ask ourselves the question of where is community. It really could be ideological, it's not necessarily geographic. If the Mara D'Astra is not necessarily the teacher for the community, that will reduce the authority that he has. And certainly where it's a political appointee, then if the community hasn't acted in a way that demonstrates that they choose to follow this, the Piskei Halacha, you aren't able to follow the Mara D'Astra. There is much more to say on this, but I don't want to hold people back from Mariv. I already davened earlier. I davened at a Plag Minyan, so I can stick around to discuss, but anybody who has to go should please do so. And I'm back next week for police on Shabbos. Shkoch.